Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance FIL 240 for spring semester 2026.
Today, review for the final exam. It is on Monday at 10 a.m. and it goes until noon, and come early and often, attendance will be taken at the final exam. Make sure that when you're finished with the exam, you show us that you have finished the exam, closed it, and all of that. Okay, just a few technical details. You can have 2 6x4 inch note cards. And if you're too cheap to buy them, I have some extras in my office. So those, and you'll also be allowed to have that ratios formula sheet that you had for the midterm, that you can have that as well for the final exam. And your mobile phones have to be put in your book bag, stowed away, and all of that to make sure that for the integrity of the exam. What am I forgetting? Okay, now a few more technical details about it. There are 39 part one questions, multiple choice, true and false. I don't have any fill in the blank because I can't figure out all the ways you can misspell numbers or words. So, but part one, 39 questions. Then part two is matching, and that is one single matching question, 10 parts. A word and you match it to a definition, or a definition and you match it to a word, similar to what you had on the midterm exam. And then part three is Excel quantitative questions. And you will have the sheets in the order that the questions are presented on that final exam. Before we go any further, I do want to have a look at the numbers one last time with you, because it might be relevant to the exam. And as you can see from on the far right, we have the Eastern markets on the other side of the world. And there was kind of a malaise over there. The Nikkei took a good drop. And that's sort of consistent with what has generally been the pattern on the Tokyo Exchange lately. Now, it's had a couple of bull days now and then, dead cat bounces, as it were. But overall, it has not been in good shape. And you see, Australia wasn't in any better shape. But, of course, Hong Kong, generally, you see the China doing quite well as it gains global dominance on the economic front. It will do well more days than it does badly, even if the rest of the world isn't. And as you can see in the middle column, the European and Great Britain markets were in a bad mood, and it got pretty strong there towards the end in a lot of them. The CAC, the DAX, and Euronext, and even FTSE in non-European Britain all had negative days. It was bearish there. And then here in the United States, it has been bearish all through the day, and it is just still getting more bearish as the day goes on. A lot of that is because the general sentiment is that there is not going to be any kind of a quick fix to the blockade in the Strait of Hormuz, which means that a lot of oil is not going to get out of there. And there is not going to be a resolution of the larger regional war that is going on. So that is going to put a depressant on the markets across the board. As you can see, so far the Dow is down almost 2/3%. The S&P 500, well, it's actually recovered a little bit. It's down only 0.13, but the NASDAQ, it's also recovering. It's actually made it just barely into green territory. But overall, it's just not a strong day. And here is the reason. Crude oil, has busted well through $100. Remember, we had gotten it down below 90 about a week ago, but now with the growing sentiment that there is not going to be a free up of oil from the Middle East, we are seeing both crude oil and the lighter Brent sweet, which is now at $110. You're already seeing it at the gas pumps. Right around here, you're seeing $4.50 a gallon is now posting in a number of gas stations. That may not be the end of the price rise. I don't for the short run, I don't foresee $5 a gallon, but even at where it is now, that is a definite deterrent on economic growth, because oil creates, as I've said many times, it produces gasoline, diesel, jet fuel, plastics, kerosene, you name it. And so all of those going up in price is going to slow down our economy significantly. We're already in a recession, notwithstanding what the official government people are saying. We are definitely in a recession. Prices are still going up aggressively. And so those are the marks of an economy that is not in good shape. And that's why you see the markets finally coming to grips with the reality that there wasn't just some temporary problem. This is more systemic. It is inside the system we're having major problems. Now, looking at the sector map, you see that technology was actually red a while ago, and now it's snuck to 0.02% up. So it's in the green, but it's not in the green by much. It's generally kind of a mixed day, but you know, overall, it's still a bearish day, although the markets do seem to be recovering somewhat. Here's a troubling number right up here. Look at this 10-year benchmark bond right here. That bond's yield leads interest rates. It's a benchmark. And remember, it had gotten down as low as about 4.25%. That was still high, but it was better than what we're now seeing. That interest rate is now at 4.4, almost 4.42%. Higher interest rates, higher borrowing rates, not as many people buying cars, not as many companies buying necessary critical equipment. And also, if you remember something that is important for you to know for the exam, if you have a higher discount rate, you have a lower net present value of projects. And companies are more likely to reject projects. And if they do that, that means no extra jobs, no new job formations. That means a borrowing by companies gets more expensive, borrowing by consumers gets more expensive. And so all of those point to real troubled waters ahead. And that is happening in an environment where many of you are now out there looking for work. You have the twin devils of a recessionary economy and the competition of artificial intelligence taking away your jobs. And so the prospects are not good. And I'm not sugarcoating that at all, despite what some other people might be telling you. You got to do good in the courses here, stay with it, and get technologically sophisticated. It's not enough to just say, well, I prompt a ChatGPT. You have to know a lot more than that to get a job right now in any sector where AIs are replacing us humans. And that goes for professors like me too. There are already universities that are using avatars to do lectures, agentic AIs, which bothers me to no end. But anyway, hang on here. Really? Let me get through my complaints. Okay, why don't you go ahead and do your attendance radar before I get started here. And while you're doing that, again, there should be a total of 64 questions on the final exam. But some of those are multiple choice, the multiple choice, true, false, drop down menus. And then there are the quantitatives. Focusing first on part two, matching. Those are definitions. Go through your notes, collect up any definitions you see where I've repeated something over and over again, like financial intermediation, the matching of surplus and deficit economic units, debenture, an uncollateralized debt obligation, forward price, a price that is an agreed upon price for delivery of a good or service in the future, all those. Get those definitions written down somewhere, and you will be fine. The matching is nothing new. You'll see some of them were from the quizzes and from the matching on the midterm. So it's nothing new to you. Just make sure that you have those in your portfolio and get them. If you need to, get those onto your note cards. Another piece to put on your note cards are the formulas. Now, you won't be using those for calculations, but I could ask you about the formulas. Like, for example, for the intrinsic value of a stock, I could say, okay, what happens if the growth rate of dividends increases? Well, you look, well, that's a numerator, so that would mean that, or that's a denominator. Well, that means this. Ratios are the same thing. You don't need to do calculations of ratios, but I could very well ask you something about ratios. So, for example, what do we, something like, okay, suppose a company increases its inventory. What would that do to the inventory turnover ratio? Oh, well, that would make it go down. Or, okay, a company's assets increase, but its net income stays the same. Well, that means that the ROA would go down, return on assets. A company's debt to total assets is 0.8. What does that mean? Well, that means the company is very heavily leveraged. So those formulas are worth it for you to know. Similarly with the net working capital. If current assets go up relative to current liabilities, okay, that means that decreases free cash flow. Well, what happens if payables go up? Well, that would increase free cash flow. Make sure you have that somewhere in your note cards if you can't memorize it. Let me get to some straightforward stuff here. First of all, the beginning of the semester, I talked about company structures, sole proprietorship, partnership, corporation. What are the differences? Which kind have liability for the owners? Which kind can issue stock? Does a company have to pay dividends? Things like that. Make sure you have that now. What's the difference between debt and equity? Which has the prior claim? Which has the residual claim? And there were other matters in the early, static versus dynamic efficiency. Those kinds of important initial definitions. What rights do stockholders have? Do the stockholders hire the CEO? Who appoints the board of directors? Those kinds of basic mechanics of the corporate entity. Just make sure that you go back to the very beginning. And I can't emphasize enough, use those quizzes as a clear indication of what I will ask on the final. As I've said before, I sometimes just copy questions from a quiz or the midterm and paste it into the final. Sometimes I might change a few words here and there, but rest assured that those are a strong part of your study routine. Your notes and those quizzes in the midterm are excellent resources for you. After that, of course, you can listen to the podcasts. That would be very difficult to listen to all of them. But then after that, then maybe the PowerPoint, chapter PowerPoints in your Canvas files. The book is going to help you, but I'd never ask anything that is in the book that I have not taught in the class as well. So don't take the book as your primary source for acing this final exam, for studying well for it. I also am going to bring up ethics. I taught you about it, and the agency dilemma. There's a PowerPoint presentation on agency in your Canvas files folder. Similarly, I gave a lecture on the Federal Reserve. You have a link to some nice videos. I'm not going to ask anything deep, but it will be something. Well, how many governors are there? Well, who regulates, who supervises? How many members are on the FOMC? There'll be surface level questions, nothing about the details of monetary policy and all that. But I will anticipate that you know that material. Now, moving on from there, starting with a few topics, interest rates. An interest rate has two big pieces, the risk-free rate and the risk premium. Inside of those two big pieces are moving parts. In the risk-free rate, there is a real rate of return and the expected inflation premium. In the risk premium, there's the default, maturity, and liquidity premiums, or the illiquidity premium, as I sometimes call it. I might give you some kind of a debt instrument. I say, okay, which of the risk premia, default, maturity, liquidity, are high and which are low? Something like that. I might ask you something about, okay, if the Federal Reserve decreases the money supply, what does that do to short-term interest rates? Now, taking you to the next step, which would be risk and return. The full rule is the greater the non-diversifiable risk, the greater the expected return. Know that, because I will ask you that. How do we find a discount rate? What is a discount rate, as opposed to what is a compounding rate? I use the discount rate for present values. I use the compounding rate for future values. What happens when I raise the discount rate? I just talked about it in the Let's Look at the Numbers section. What does that do to a net present value if you raise the discount rate? Now, risk and return. Again, returning to that. There are several little Greek letters. Sigma is the total risk that is broken into two parts. The non-diversifiable risk is systematic. The diversifiable risk is non-systematic. One of those I can remove, or at least suppress. The other I cannot. Which one of those is beta? In fact, I might even give you a question where I have the three Greek letters, sigma, beta, and rho. Which is which? Sigma is total risk. Beta is non-diversifiable risk. Rho isn't even a risk. It's the correlation of two stocks. In my portfolio, do I want that rho, that correlation coefficient between two stocks to be high, or do I want it to be low? As far as risk and return is concerned, make sure you understand what the capital asset pricing model means. It is the way that we relate risk, beta, to expected return. Now, as far as, let me hit bonds here for a little bit. Make sure you know the difference between a bill, a note, and a bond. Now, I will not ask you a math question about clean versus dirty price, but I could ask you something more qualitative about clean and dirty prices of bonds. Which do I see on a ticker symbol? Which is bigger, clean or dirty? What's the difference between a mortgage bond and a debenture? I might give you a debt security. I describe it for you, and you tell me which of the premium, default, maturity, and liquidity are high, which are low. Now, obviously, I will, in the quantitative section, I'll ask you to find me a price of a bond. I'll ask you to find me a yield on a bond. As I did on a quiz, I may ask you to tell me what happens to the price if the spread between coupon and yield gets smaller or larger. What happens to the price as the bond approaches maturity? I did this on a quiz. So again, go to those quizzes. I've already telegraphed you the punch, and I'm just going to show you that same punch again and see if you can dodge it. Never did bring up the quiz, the midterm. So, no, I want to look at the actual quizzes, the actual exam. Oh, I was about to bring up the midterm, the final exam there, and it was going to show there. So, you could thank the teaching assistant for telling me not to do that. She's right there. I was about to pull it up there. Yep. Okay. Let me not do that. I know. Okay. I'm just looking into it. Well, I suppose I could just show you the final exam. But probably wouldn't want to see it anyway. Just let me go through, see what I've forgotten. Oh, yeah, as far as ratios go, I'm not going to ask you to calculate, but I will ask you to interpret some things that you might see in a ratio. What is that telling you? As far as present values, future values, net present values, and all that, I could ask you something like, well, what happens if you increase the discount rate? What does that do to your NPV? Something like that, just so you have the qualitative understanding of what those interest rates are doing and why we fuss so much about interest rates, because they have such a profound effect on everything. Make sure you understand liquidity. Now, so far, two times I've asked you for the definition of liquidity. And there is an internet definition, which is wrong. And even the second time I asked it, 30% of the respondents gave the internet definition of liquidity. Let's try to get it down to 100%, give the right definition, the one I gave you in class. As far as liquidity goes, I want you to show me that you understand how liquidity is related to the expected return from an asset. Do liquid assets have higher expected return or lower expected return than less liquid assets? I ask that on a quiz. And again, this is one of those things where there are these objectives of the course, and we want by the end for assurance of learning that by the end you have gotten these down, act correctly. Okay, WAC. I will not ask you a weighted average cost of capital math question on the final. You won't have it. Good news for you. But I will ask you about weighted average cost of capital. What do I mean by capital structure? What do I mean by optimal capital structure? What happens if a company is at its optimal capital structure, but its earnings keep going up and it keeps paying off its debts? What does that do to the weighted average cost of capital? Now, the free cash flow, I will not have you calculate a free cash flow on the final. However, I will expect you to know the formula. And again, as far as net operating working capital goes, make sure that you know what changes in net operating working capital do to free cash flow. If current assets go up, does that make free cash flow go up or down? Those kinds of things. Okay. Some basic questions. What costs are important to finance but not to accounting, or vice versa? What is finance as far as an academic subject area? As far as, let me mention, I did talk about ethics. Know the two primary schools of ethical thought, one by Immanuel Kant, one by John Stuart Mill. Cost of capital. Make sure you have in your notes, or at least in your memory, the formulas for the different component costs. The cost of preferred stock, the cost of common stock, the cost of new stock, and the after-tax cost of debt. You won't have to calculate those because Excel can do that for you, but you will have to know what happens to these costs if there are changes. Like, for example, what happens to the cost of retained earnings if the growth rate of dividends increases? Or what happens if the price of the stock goes up or down? That means you look at the formula and see where it sits. Is it a numerator? Is it a denominator? That'll tell you where the cost of that component is going with a change in one of those pieces of the formula. Just make sure that you know how interest rates affect present and future values. I've already mentioned that. But all you have to do is think about it a little bit or look at the formula, or you can even test it in one of the sheets to see what happens. Now, as far as the numbers are concerned, those screenshots, you will have a screenshot like you did on the last quiz. I'll be asking you for an HPR. You also should know what beta means in the screen. You should also know what the price-earnings ratio is telling you from a screen. They are telling you information that I've spent many of the classes going through. And I want to make sure that you can show me that you know those, what those numbers are saying to us. Okay. And I did one on being able to identify exactly what an annuity is. Is it periodic, non-periodic? Is it level or non-level? Is it ordinary or due? Just being able to identify. There's not a calculation. It's just identifying what the annuity is all about. Okay, now, the matching section is just definitions. I'll say a description, you identify the word or term that is associated with it. Things like debenture, spot, forward, financial intermediation, fiduciary duty. Just find which one of those is matching to a description. There are 10 of those. That's part two. Now, then, the last part is the Excel quantitative part. The spreadsheets at the top will follow in the same order as the problems in part three. Make sure you know, though, that there are some of those spreadsheets that you would answer several questions with, like the bond calculations enhanced. That finds the price and it can find the yield. The present value and future value sheet, that finds present value, future value, and it also finds a loan payment. The NPV and IRR, of course, finds net present value and internal rate of return. Some of the sheets are one-trick ponies, like the CAPM sheet is just to find the cap, the expected return. That's all it does. The HPR sheet, all that does is find the holding period return. It's not multifaceted. So some of the sheets you'll want to pull down for several. Now let me make a comment about those spreadsheets. Some of your computers are actually quite weak, and they will not be able to pull down all of the sheets at once. So be careful about that. It'll overload the computer, your computer. In the same vein, though, before you begin the exam, maybe that morning before you come to the, or when you get here, clear the cache. That's Control Shift Delete. In a Mac, that's Command Shift Delete. Get rid of anything in the cache that will free up power for the spreadsheets. You'll be able to load more and they'll go faster. At the bottom of your Let me show you this. We have now several practice quizzes at clear at the bottom. Pardon? Oh, that would help if they could see it. Okay. Practice quizzes. These will let you be able to make sure that the Respondus Lockdown browser works. And you can take this as many times as you want. And also, you get a bunch of problems in there. You can pull down the spreadsheets. Make sure you can pull them down. They're the same ones that will be on the final exam. You can pull them all down. It's just for you as a very serious practice. They will look on the final, the problems will, as they look in the practice. Just different names and numbers, names of companies, numbers. If you can do those, make sure that you, if you can be sure that you can do those problems, you've got a pretty darn good handful of points on the final exam. If you're good at it, you can probably do each one in less than a minute. Now, this quiz has fewer than 65 questions. You have 120 minutes. So your average time for each question is 2 minutes. The more you get done in a minute or less, the more time you have for the ones that will make you stop and think for a while. It is intended for you to be able to complete in about an hour to an hour and 15 minutes. That's the design of it. You have a full 2 hours. If you've mastered these spreadsheets, you've really shortened your time for that whole section. That gives you more time for other problems on the final exam. And again, these, you can do them as many times as you want. You can just keep trying until you get it down to mastery level. There's no better way for you to get these quantitative problems right. And again, all of your quizzes with the answers are open for you to study. The midterm is open for you to study. These are your primary tools with your notes. And then you can also go to my podcasts. Now, it would be daunting to try to listen to all 27 of the lectures before the final exam. However, if you're struggling on a specific subject or something within a certain subject, click on the specific lecture. It has the title, and net present value and future value. You can just see the title, click on it. You can jump to where you want to listen. This is an excellent resource. Now, again, first of all, I'm done with what I want to tell you. That's your study guide that I am providing, what you have written down. Now it's your turn to ask me, what do you know? What do you not know? What do you want to ask me? Do you have anything that you want to know? If not, I will be in my office on Monday at 7:15, and I will have office hours on Friday. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.